This is the Development Locker podcast, and this is your weekly investment in your development as you continue your transition through life and academy football. In season three, we bring you even more episodes, more guests who you can connect with, and even more insight into individuals like you who have a similar experiences in pursuing a career in the professional game. Over the next 11 months and 48 episodes, we aim to cover the key topics you will face along your journey. From the challenges you will have to overcome, the ups, the downs, and many experiences along the way. We will be here every week to discuss the current issues in your lives, support you in your journey, and continue your development to being the best version of you. In your interviews from the locker. Sam Wright, remember the name. This week's guest is a former academy player who has lived the experiences, the ups, the downs, and all that occurs in between, before coming out of the other side. Having faced two major transitions in his football career, he could well have been yet another statistic in the world of academy football. But no, Sam isn't that guy and has used his learnings to very good effect. About to graduate from UA92, the brainchild and university thought up and created by Gary Neville and the class of 92, Sam has recently completed his dissertation on similar experiences of academy players, the support network within academies, and how player care plays its own role in this process. With aspirations and a drive to gain a role as player care, Sam is the man to potentially make those final changes to gain even greater engagement, provide deeper insight into the mind of an academy player, and a massive step towards truly developing the individual to overcome all the life's lessons that lay ahead for the young people we are responsible for. Sam spent time out of his day to talk about all this and more in this week's interview from the locker. Welcome back, everyone. Another week, another episode, and another guest. So, Sam, as you probably be aware, we get straight into the questions and straight onto the why. And yours is a great why because, and we'll go into a little bit of your background in a minute, but why do you want to enter the role of player care? Because I know we've spoke previously on your passion and you wanting to kind of get involved in the academy system of player care role. Out of all the roles that are available within sport, within football, within academy football, why do you want player care?
It's a good question. And I think probably a great place to start for us, really. So for me, there's a couple of reasons why that I want to get into player care within the academy system. I don't really have one sort of main reason that is driving me. It's a combination of a few things, really. So I think everything stems from my time within academy football. So a bit of background information about myself. Like you said, I spent time within the academy at Bolton from 12 to 16, released at 16, then went on trial to probably about 10 different clubs, I think. I was offered a scholarship at Salford City after a couple of trials there. So spent 2 years there as a scholar. And then at 18, I wasn't offered a professional contract there either. So then obviously released. So I think after that, I dipped in and out of semi-pro for a year or so, but didn't really enjoy it. So I applied for university on a sports management degree. Not something that I had planned, to be honest. But in terms of giving me a long-term plan and some organisation in my life, it really helped. So in terms of player care, this sort of only came around about a year ago, to be honest with you. Probably at the end of my second year at uni. I knew I had sort of the dissertation idea coming up in third year, and I had to think of an area of research that I wanted to focus on. And to be honest, the sort of the standard common sports management dissertation topic areas like your event management, your sports marketing, your sports finance, they weren't really something that interested me. So I thought about what I had experienced in football and what problems I've faced, and I think the sort of main problem that I had with my time in football was the transition out of clubs after not being offered a scholarship at Bolton and a pro at Salford. There wasn't sort of any procedure and no preparation for getting a sorry you aren't good enough, and no support actually once I had left each of these clubs. And so something me and my parents spoke about quite a lot after both occasions, and we couldn't get our heads around why there wasn't anything there to, first of all, prepare us for a bad decision, and secondly, support us once we were given the decision. It was definitely very brutal and mentally really affected me. So I focused my research on whether young footballers are given enough support when released from a scholarship. Initially, I reached out to a few of my old coaches and staff members that I had connections with, and a few were happy to help. I won't name names, but the guys that did help, I sort of really appreciate the time and effort they put in with me. A couple of them said, yeah, we're more than happy to help, but I think the more relevant people are our player care officers. Now, I was like, okay, great, brilliant, that sounds great, but what the heck does a player care officer do? Because obviously, when I was playing, there wasn't anyone in that role sort of within the clubs that I was at. So I spent some time with a couple of them learning about what they do, how their day-to-day operations look. And I just knew from there, really, that this is what I wanted to do.
Yeah, it's interesting there. You paint a very good picture of your journey. You've done it in a very concise way, and kind of wanted to pick a couple of points from that. I mean, you mentioned about the transition from 16s from Bolton, and then from under 18s Salford. Were they similar? Were they totally different? Because they're two kind of, obviously, two different phases.
Yeah.
But I suppose from a player perspective, and that's what I'm interested in speaking to you about, because somebody who does play care within the academy system, you know, I never got to that level of playing, so I can never be in your shoes, you know, in all the will in the world and spending as much time as I would possibly do to try and be that. I can't. So are they similar transitions, or is one worse than the other? How did you find the transition from under 16s and then kind of being released at that age to being released at under 18s level?
I think the main core feeling of it, the disappointment was the same. Obviously, you're getting told at the end of the day in this situation you're not good enough. But Bolton was really harsh, because it wasn't actually to my face; it was to my dad's face, and then my dad had to tell me. Mm. And I think as a 16-year-old, I would have definitely sort of respected it more coming from a coach. I know, obviously, we'll get into it in a bit more detail, but now it's the whole process is completely different. Mm-hmm. And at Salford, it was a little bit better. They sort of brought me into a meeting, sat me down and said, we've obviously had our check-in points over the last 2 years about where you're at, and unfortunately, you're not going to be able to carry on with us. Mm-hmm. But I think with Salford, because I knew, so at Bolton, you do your scholarship and you know you've got time to look for another club. You've got time to go, you know what, I've got probably a couple of months now to have a look round, see what other clubs are thinking of me. But after Salford, it was very much like, right, okay, I've not been offered a pro. There's nothing else sort of presenting itself to me. There's no opportunities here. I'm literally just at the end of my time in football now. So that really did hit hard, to be fair, and it took a long time to process it. And my friends will tell you, if you ever speak to any of them, that I probably went missing for probably about 3-4 months, because I didn't want to go out. I didn't want to speak to anyone, because I think you've touched on it with a couple of people, that sort of loss of identity, that loss of confidence, it really does hit you hard. And that probably happened more so after Salford than it did at Bolton.
With you having those two releases kind of relatively close together, does the first one prepare you for the second one, or does the second one really compound some of the feeling? Like you said, you went missing for 3 or 4 months. Did you just come get over psychologically, mentally, over being released under 16s, and then it's like, bam, another knockout punch 2 years later? Or did you feel that the first one kind of prepared you for that decision that ultimately came at under 18s level, or does it not work that way?
I think in terms of your resilience, it absolutely helps. I know. So my group at Salford, we were a lot of lads that have not been offered scholarships elsewhere, so we'd had that disappointment already. So I think when the second decision came, in some ways, yes, I was kind of ready for it, and I was sort of armoured up with the tools to sort of take it. But at the same time, like I said, it's still, you're getting told you're not good enough, and you're getting told that your journey with us at Salford is ending. So I think for me, that sort of took over. So I was prepared for it, but I put a lot of work in for 2 years. I was there full time. And I made sure I was the first one in, last one out, and I made sure I did extra, and even that wasn't good enough. So I think mentally it was a massive struggle, to be fair.
And you mentioned there armoured up with the tools. Was that tools that you'd had to get put in your toolbox, your locker, call it what you will, from yourself, totally independent? Was that family, friendship, support groups, or was that a few little bits that both of the academies had provided you, or is it a combination of all of those kind of three support groups? You know, talk us around what tools you felt you had in terms of, you know, being able to, I mean, I know you mentioned resilience, but what other tools did allow you to kind of get over that second release at such a young age?
I think, like you said, I've obviously got that sort of resilience from the first decision, I'll talk a bit about it later on, but my parents were absolutely fantastic. So they were constantly there to support me, sort of give me options, whether I wanted to hear them or not, about, you know, university or qualifications or doing stuff after football. So I think having that support network there from my family was probably the only thing I had, and the most important thing, obviously, because without them, I probably would have absolutely crumbled. So they, I think, in terms of resilience, yeah, I had it, but my mum and dad absolutely kept me going through the bad stages. And I think because of them, I am probably in this situation now, because they sort of kept me going, and I've been through university, I've done that now. And if it wasn't for them, I wouldn't have done that either. So I have a lot of sort of thanks to give to them, I think.
Parents are often overlooked, probably, I'd say, under-supported, not by everyone within the academy system, I have to say. But
yeah,
I think we do undervalue their importance, certainly when it comes to, like you said, the transition, the release period, because, yeah, they've probably got to, and I think you're probably doing yourself down a little bit. I'm sure you had a lot of resilience already within you, probably as a byproduct of your upbringing through your parents. But yeah, it's great to hear that your parents are on board, and yeah, we're throwing the university dart your way, and yeah, funny how things have worked out.
I think as well as that, though, you can flip it on the head and say, as great as my parents were, with certain things, naturally they didn't get the whole process that only someone within an academy environment sort of full time understand. So that is where sort of my gap for my dissertation came from. Until obviously I started looking into player care. That actually, if some, because obviously there's lads out there that won't have the support that I had. So
true.
If they aren't there, who is going to be? But obviously now I've sort of developed my knowledge around player care. It's great to see the clubs offering support, and the clubs that I've been into, the certain individuals that present the actual support to players is really good to see.
So talk us through the insight from your view, through your lens, in terms of what you feel you can bring then to the player care role in future, because I'm very, very sure and can almost guarantee that you will be finding, or will be finding you somewhere in a player care position within academy football soon, because of your passion, because of your knowledge, because of you wanting to go above and beyond and reach out and research and things of that nature. So tell us, you know, sell yourself to potential future employers, but
yeah,
what do you believe, what insight do you think you can bring, not just as a academy player, but Sam Wright, the academy player, what do you think you can learn from yours and put into practice?
I think another great question from you, by the way. I think in terms of player care, there's no better way to understand the stresses of academy football than to have actually experienced it myself. And like I said, with two parents experiencing the journey with me, I sort of know that there are so many things that an academy footballer has to deal with and that a lot of people don't actually understand. So take me, for example, I was finishing school at 3 o'clock, jumping in my dad's car, getting changed, eating on the way, being at training 5 p.m. till 9 p.m, getting home at 10:30, 11 p.m. And that was probably 3-4 times a week for 4 years. So actually, if you're not in the situation, it's very hard to get your head around. Again, at Salford, I was getting two trains and a bus to training and the same to get home. I had college work to juggle, driving lessons, relationships on my mind. And I probably would have died for someone to go, well, you know what, you're doing great, you're doing really well, but just slow down a bit. Let's talk about it, get it off your chest, whatever's worrying you, and work out how we can move forward in a better way for you. And I sometimes think about how I wanted people to talk to me in those situations. And the coaches did what they could, but ultimately their job was to coach us on the pitch. They had enough to think about in terms of that and very rarely had time to check in on us off the pitch. And I think with my experiences, it can work in favour with any potential group of players that I work with, to have someone there as a player care officer who's experienced the whole process, both the ups and the downs. I'd like to think that they're more inclined to go, you know what, this guy will understand. I can probably start opening up to him a little bit, because I know at some point he's probably been in the same situation as me. And plus, you know, like I said, it's better to talk to him than the coaches, because I don't want them to think something is wrong when really I just want to chat about something, which I'm certain you've probably seen similar in that. And now that doesn't mean there's something massively wrong in what a player wants to do, you know, whether they're talking to me or someone else. But I remember being called into a meeting with my coaches at Salford, and they sat me down and said, how are you doing, mate? We've had a few members of staff report back that you're being a little bit moody and you're not really as talkative as you normally are. Now, at the time, I probably was struggling mentally to keep up, but I didn't want to tell the coaches because of that stigma that was there. That is, I'm not saying that I'm struggling mentally, because they might see it as a weakness. So yeah, I think having lived the experience, the insight I have is great. And I know that for academy players, there are a huge number of contributors to stress. And I know knowing what possibly could have helped me in different situations is a great advantage, because I can sort of take the ideas that I would have wanted and try and implement them on players who are going through the same thing. So I think on top of that as well, obviously I've got my experience, but we've spoken previously about sort of mentoring courses, obviously the player care qualification with Hugo. So I think with sort of the education side of things mixed with my experience, I think it's a great way to sort of angle my support of players.
No, I totally agree. And I think it's something that definitely needs to be more of, I think, that lived experience. Don't get me wrong, I don't think it's, and it doesn't mean to come across as disrespectful, but it's not the be all and end all, but it's certainly a place. And like I said, individuals like myself who never got to that level, we can't fully address all the issues that are in player care if we can't get the input and the insight from yourselves firsthand. Yeah. Not just speaking with you and then going away and designing a program going, oh, I've had a chat with an academy player and, oh, he said this and this. It's, you know yourself, it's that living and breathing, it's evolving all the time. So yeah, I totally, everything you're saying makes perfect sense. Right.
Good.
You touched upon there about your support network, and I know you mentioned your parents. Was there any other kind of support networks that were available to you during your academy journey, something and a support network that was set aside from academy football, or any kind of, you know, again, you don't have to name names or anything, but is there any other support network that you felt was really integral, really important during those two phases of you being released?
I think in terms of sort of your external organisations, we weren't offered a great deal. Okay. Or, well, we weren't offered anything, to be honest with you. I know from obviously the two times that I've been released, I would have really appreciated the club sort of signposting me in the direction of someone who could help. But I think in terms of other people in my support network, they won't mind me mentioning names. So Chris Casper, the sporting director at Salford, he was great with me. He put me through my scouting qualifications. He helped me through university with the link that Salford have with my specific university. And he's kind of just left Salford sort of open to me to go in and be around the environment and sort of still sort of develop my knowledge of how full-time football works, which for me has been, you know, invaluable because not a lot of people get that opportunity to do so. I think the other sort of academy staff, Jamie and Lewis, they sort of made sure the sort of very little time they had spare, they gave it to us players off the pitch. So I remember Lewis, he actually came around to my house after I was told I wasn't getting a professional contract, and he sat down with me and my family and sort of said, what are you looking to do next? This is what I did, but obviously you don't have to follow my path. This is what you could do. But ultimately don't panic, because a lot of people go through the same situation and a lot of people come out better and go on to have careers that they really enjoy. So in terms of staff at Salford, they were sort of doing everything they could. But like I said, the main job wasn't to do that for us. So it was very difficult for them to put everything into it. Whereas I think if you had a player care officer sort of there full time working there, us players probably would have benefited a lot more from it.
Yeah, and you mentioned Jamie there kind of visiting your house and kind of going, right, these are the possible routes, pathways, options for you, but you don't have to follow in his footsteps. And that kind of brings me on to the next question, really. And I remember thinking about it and thinking, I've got to be really careful of how I say it, because like I was saying before, your lived experience is, you know, it can't be matched. You can't buy that sort of stuff.
Yeah.
But how do you feel that you won't potentially bring any preconceived biases? Because I'm speaking with you previously, I know you don't think your experience is every player's experience, and that's just not the case. So yeah. how do you feel? Do you feel that your insight you'll bring in, you'll be able to balance that opinion, your experience, and still be open-minded to kind of identify and understand the different experience of academy players? How do you think you'll balance that kind of seesaw of not coming in and going, well, when I got released, this is what happened, and yeah, I'm going to change this or that doesn't, and then kind of treating everybody the same, because we know that every person, every player is an individual?
Again, a great question. I think what I have to sort of use my experience as is a starting point, almost, as this is where my passion comes from, but it can't go too far into a role within player care. So obviously I've had my experiences, but like you said, I understand that every player is different. Every player has different situations off the pitch. Every player has their own problems. So I think something that I'm sort of aiming to do, as you know, is sort of going around and speaking to different clubs about their sort of player care strategies. So yeah. I think if I have the knowledge around that and around how to approach each situation differently, I think sort of naturally I can't think about my experiences and try and drill that into players. I just have to do what's best for them, if that makes sense.
No, it makes perfect sense. And I think that's almost the impossible job, isn't it? In any probably role within academy football, is they are all individuals, you know, the whole, depending on the academy, 120 players plus, it's a difficult, challenging job, as I'm sure you know, and I'm sure you'll find out in your first role in player care. Before we get on to kind of the player care role in a little bit more detail,
yeah,
and what you think from your experience, the research, the clubs, the academies you've been to, I wanted to ask you, as a previous academy player, what you feel is missing, because you've talked about there was no offer of external support. You were talking about, you know, it's done by a letter or it's done by a face-to-face meeting, but you've quickly identified massive gaps in that support network. So from you, and not wanting to give too much away and everybody else steal your ideas, but what do you feel right now is missing from that support piece? Is it further opportunities to develop? Is it advice around transition early on before they get those decisions, or do you feel it's a bit of guidance and support as soon as that decision's been made?
I think it's hard for me, really, because obviously I've not been in the full-time environment to sort of properly identify where we could improve. But I think, first of all, the people I have sort of been around and been into shadow at a couple of clubs, they sort of proved to me and given me evidence that it has come such a long way, the support the players have. So I think it's definitely worth mentioning that. Yeah. I think what I'd want to see is maybe, so I know a lot of guest speakers are going in and the sort of ex-professionals who are talking about their time in football and how they've transitioned out and what can help them. I think that's great, but I think they've been there. They had light at the end of their tunnel. So I think maybe bringing in some individuals who haven't had light at the end of their tunnel and have gone on to still have great careers. So for example, bring in, I don't know, some of my old teammates who didn't get offered professional contracts, had a really sort of grim time after, like I've mentioned, but have gone on to have great careers somewhere else. So I think balancing that sort of insight with the players would be good, because obviously a small percentage of them will still make it professional. So to hear from ex-professionals for them would be great. But again, to hear the other sort of side of it of, yeah, I didn't get a professional contract, but it's not the end of the world. You can still have great lives without being a professional footballer. So I think that would be great. I think something that I saw in one of the clubs, which I'd like to see implemented in a couple more, would be so they go into their scholarship and the decision is a no. And they have sort of meetings every 6 weeks. Basically, their idea is, at the minute, we're not giving you professional contracts, but this is what you can do to change our mind. So
okay.
I think having that sort of culture where it's not the coaches and the players, that they're very much unified and working together, I think that would be great to see across a couple more clubs as well.
Okay, that's good. Yeah, that's some good insight there. And yeah, I suppose it's a bit like management and coaches, that you take in a little bit from every club, every academy, the individuals you're reaching out to, connecting with, and yeah, you just kind of mixing that with your passion, mixing that with your insight, and it'll be a unique individual that somebody gets in terms of player care.
Yeah.
That player care role, you mentioned your time in academy football previously. There wasn't that role per se as a title, should we say.
Yeah.
How have you seen that change from kind of the outside or on the edges, and what was your experience? I mean, because you know a lot about the player care role. How did you see some of those things implemented or covered in a very low level during your time at academy football, but under a different guise? Or have you just seen kind of really nothing at all in your experience and it's totally changed for the better? What's your opinion of how you've seen that introduction of the player care role at the moment?
Yeah, so I think in terms of my experiences, I think it was very much, like I said, that stigma was there of if you sort of mention that you're struggling mentally, then it is looked at as a weakness. So I think there may have been welfare officers and safeguarding officers in place, and the coaches were very much open to talk to us. But at the same time, I definitely, this is my opinion, I'm not talking for other people, but I definitely felt that I couldn't sort of open up because to the individuals that reached out and said, we're here if you need us, I couldn't do that because I didn't want to be looked at in a different way by our coaches. I wanted to be looked at on how I'm sort of producing on the pitch, if that makes sense. But I think from what I've seen so far, I think the way that player care officers are sort of working with clubs is really good. And the player care officers that I've met, it almost looks to me like you have to be a specific type of person to be in that role. You have to actually really genuinely care about helping people. And, you know, if a club is able to recruit a player care officer who has that, then it's such a plus and an added value to that club, because I've seen it sort of dipping in and out of clubs. Players actually are really putting their trust in player care officers, and the numbers that I've sort of had mentioned to me about the actual amount of players that are going with tiny problems that they fix within a couple of days or big problems, players are actually putting a lot of trust into player care officers, which, again, for me, was surprising, because when I was going through that period, I wouldn't have even imagined speaking to someone about what I've going on off the pitch.
Yeah, you mentioned that. I mean, again, you don't have to name names, and I appreciate if it's a bit of a personal question, but what made you feel that way then, that you couldn't reach out? Was that something subliminal? Was it, you know, the body language? Was it some of the language used by coaches, staff? Or was this something that you've kind of witnessed yourself, or the experience of other players, where maybe a teammate has openly reached out and gone, "Oh, mentally, I'm struggling. I'm wrapped with fear that I'm not going to get a scholarship come the end of the season," and you've physically seen somebody treated not in probably the best way, or maybe just an ignorance thing where it's just been kind of brushed under the carpet. Is it something overtly that you've seen, you've witnessed, you've been in earshot of, that you just think, "Oof, that's now going to not make me want to kind of speak up"? Or do you feel it was just almost like a cultural, environmental thing, where you just think, actually, I'm getting a vibe here that it's probably not going to be well received if I do speak up? Was it either one of those camps, or was it something different that, or can you not just quite put your finger on it, why you felt you couldn't kind of speak up about some of your issues?
I think it was probably a mixture of the both of what you've just mentioned there. I think I remember a couple of times sort of lads have sort of not turned up to training for whatever reason, and after we've heard that the struggling with whatever they had going on, and I remember sort of a couple of coaches saying to us, you know, if this is a really competitive sport, and if you're not prepared to sort of handle it mentally, then you know, it might be worth looking for something else. And I think to say that to some teenagers who probably all were struggling mentally wasn't the best thing to do, because just because they spoke out first, they shouldn't suffer from it. I think obviously that plays on my mind a lot. Well, played on my mind a lot throughout my time playing. The fact that, like you said, a lot of times it was probably brushed under the carpet a bit, and it was not something that people put a lot of focus on. So it was sort of just like, right, I've got something going on. I'm not really sure how to do it, but you know what? I've just got to keep going, and I've got to ignore it because it can't affect my game, and I can't have other people knowing about it.
Yeah, it's interesting you say that, because you know, it is an extremely difficult role, I think, because you know, it's not to speak on behalf of anyone. You know, your experiences, and not being there at that time, it's hard, because you know more than me, it is a competitive environment. It is, you know, you've got to be mentally strong. But yeah, maybe that was articulated in maybe just a slightly incorrect way, or a way where you young lads have interpreted that as, oof, okay, right, that's not really going to be an invite for me to speak out, then I'll carry on, sort of thing. And it is tough, isn't it? I suppose that's one of the things you would probably bring in. And I love what you said there about, you know, the need for, or not the need, but the people who go into player care, you know, they really do have that kind of inner caring of individuals. They want to see them flourish. And, you know, it's good you've recognised that, and I'm sure you'll be one of those people as well in the future. In terms of, sorry, go on, Sam.
No, just saying, yeah, absolutely. I think that person has to be right, don't they?
Yeah, they do. And I think now with the Premier League money coming in, well, it's coming for over nearly a year now, and the fact that, you know, it's encouraging people like yourself to think, oh, there's a role now. There's a place where I can actually bring about change. That can only be a good thing. Before we kind of move on to some of the future bits, one last question about maybe a little bit of the past. Is this something you would tell your younger self, that you feel you had a missed opportunity to develop, or there's something that you may have done different, whether that's between you leaving Bolton and leaving in Salford, or is it just literally zero, no regrets? It is what it is, and that's made you the human being that you are today. Or is there anything you possibly would say to your younger self to maybe change your pathway, maybe slightly, majorly, or somewhere in between?
Yeah, I think it's a tough one, this, really, because I think for it to have a proper impact, the wording has to be spot on. I think because I was so focused on football, I didn't actually put a lot of effort into much else or take notice of other things, whether it was minimal or not. I didn't really sort of give it time or effort. So I think something I probably would have liked to have heard would be everything has a reason. We're not just sort of given these opportunities for a tick box or, you know, just for the fun of it. I think I would have liked to have understood that everything we're being offered and everything we're being put through has a reason. So for a quick example, we used to do IDP presentations with our coaches about how we're doing on the pitch. And I just thought that, you know, that they're doing this for the fun of it, or they want to see, you know, see what we're like presenting in front of them. But, you know, sort of looking back now, it was obviously to test how we do under pressure, how we do in terms of presenting in front of new people, how we do in terms of resilience, in terms of putting a presentation together. It was very much to test us. So I think understanding, if I could have understood that everything I'm doing has a reason, I probably wouldn't have taken them for granted, if that makes sense. And I would have sort of understood the value of the time I had there.
Okay, putting the past to one side, let's concentrate on the future for the final few questions. And the next one I want to ask you is around ownership. We've talked about this on previous episodes, and I think there's no perfect person to ask than yourself. And who do you feel has ownership on an individual's development, the individual being a academy player? Do you feel it lies upon the player mostly, or the academy staff and the player care officer, or, you know, whatever title the academy give them, or the external organizer? Where do you feel, I mean, I know probably you're going to say a combination, you're absolutely right if you were to say that, where do you feel it lies the most on in terms of the ownership of that kind of development and that preparation for life after football, as well as during that footballing journey?
For me, it has to be the individual. I think in the end, the only person who is truly able to develop a person is themselves. Now, obviously, like you said, there are many factors that sort of make this easier or harder. But yeah, ultimately, I think the individual who has to take ownership of their development, I think it has to be them. But I think the good thing with player care, with having coaches around, is that we are there to help this. Personal development is what it says on the tin. It's personal. But, you know, player care can sort of supply the tools and opportunities and the safe spaces to do this. But I think only that individual can choose whether to engage or not engage with what we're presenting them. So I think something that I've recently done at uni is probably worth mentioning here. We spoke a lot about leadership and about strategic leadership.
Okay.
And what works and what doesn't. And a big thing that came up was psychological safety, having that sort of safe space to make decisions and speak up about what you think is right or wrong. Now, obviously, part of personal development is making mistakes, learning from them, and, you know, moving on, being wiser than you were before. Now, if you're in a club where you don't feel this psychological safety and you're scared to speak up or make mistakes, then, you know, how are you supposed to better yourself? So I think the club has to make it the right environment to do so, but ultimately, at the end of the day, the player has to sort of make the first step and choose to do so to themselves.
That's perfect. That's almost like I'll that's probably a direct quote I'll put in any research paper I write, that one. That was that good. But yeah, it was, I think you're spot on in terms of the individual nature. I think sometimes, I think we all probably are our own worst enemy, aren't we? I'm sure as a player, you're probably thinking, oh, is there more I could have done? Could have done this, could have done that. I know as a member of staff, I know I was at Bolton, not at the same time as yourself, but I know when we first connected, it's like, you know, oh, we could have done so much more looking back now. You know, we could have done this, we could have done that. And I think that's the right way to think. But I think it's also a bit of a, almost like a little bit too late. Like, you know, it's the horse has already bolted type of analogy. Yeah. And, you know, yeah, you've already left, had to deal with your own transition. And it's all well and good coming up with these ideas, but like you said, sometimes we've got to make those mistakes to learn, and that's the awful thing, really. But I'm sure that you're going to put all your learnings into only positive things.
Of course.
Talking about applying those learnings, so far, in your relatively young career, and you know your studies and your research and dissertation paper that you've done, is the one thing that you would change in the play care provision that you've seen across the board, or is there a few things you would change? Again, I don't want you to think that you've got to give away some of your secrets you're holding back for that future employer, but is this one thing we're just like, look, there's quite a few to change, but if I had to pick one, it has to be this that needs to change, and it needs to change now.
I think from what I've seen, because of where I saw it when I was a player to where it's at now, I think I'm still quite taken aback about how far it has actually come. So I think in terms of that, it's very difficult. Very difficult one. I think possibly the start of the journey that the lads have, I think maybe, you know, they come in, they sign the scholarship or they sign the first year pro. I think maybe introducing player care there and then, and maybe even making them sort of sign an agreement with the club to say, I understand that what's being offered to me, and I'm prepared to fully engage in it, because I think that's probably, you know, one of the problems that a lot of player care departments are having in clubs is, we're providing them with some absolutely fantastic opportunities, some amazing guest speakers, you know, we're there for them when they need them, but at the end of the day, they're not engaging as much. So I think in terms of that, I think getting players to understand early on in their time within a club that player care is up there with your S&C, with your, you know, your sports science, with your nutrition, with your medics, with your analysis. I think, you know, it's probably easy to say than to actually implement into a club, but making sure that player care is up there as important as everything else would probably be what I'd say, to be honest.
And that brings me beautifully onto my penultimate question, if I can say it, is that engagement. So you've hit the nail on the head from my perspective, only my opinion, is it is a frustration of you feel you do a lot, you feel you're starting to make a little bit of inroads and a positive impact on the young players that you're involved and you're responsible for caring for. What do you feel, either as a player yourself, so whether there was an opportunity for you to engage in something you didn't for whatever reason, or when you've been into clubs and academies where you've seen that lack of engagement, what do you put that down on? Because there's many stories out there, and it's that time of year, return and release, and I'm sure there'll be many stories to come over this season and coming seasons of player X, player Y, they've got released, they didn't get this, they don't know what to do. And I know as a individual within the academy system for 8, 9 years now, that a lot, not all, but a lot of academies that I'm aware of do some really good work and are preparing players for after football and that transition of being released and going between clubs and academies. But a lot of times they don't engage, they don't reach out. And I know you mentioned about not wanting to speak out because of the culture, but is there something different that we're missing that means that young academy players now are still not tapping into the network, the advice, the guidance, the support, all the different things that come within player care?
This is the one, isn't it? This is the question that a lot of people will be asking. Well, hopefully not a long time, but you know, as it continues to grow and evolve, I think it will be getting asked quite a lot. And I think for so long, the sort of holistic well-being of an academy footballer has been overlooked a bit. I think to me, as a player, if I'm sort of picking bits like that up, I'm sort of not going to engage in it as much, because I'm sort of picking things up from the coaches that they're just doing these certain things for a tick box. Now, obviously, it has changed a lot and it's not just tick box anymore, but possibly there is still little bits of that culture sneaking in here and there. So I think sort of having a complete culture change, culture shift, will start to sort of make the players take notice, and hopefully the penny might drop sooner. So you know, if you get your academy manager, your first team manager, you know, your 23s, 18 coaches all on board, as soon as the player come in, and for them to see that it's a massive sort of part of the club and it's not, it is truly taken seriously, I think would be, I think I mentioned it just then, it would be a great start for clubs to have. You know, if, for example, if I went into Salford and the first thing that the academy manager speaks to me about, or you know, speaks to me in the same sentence as coaching or S&C or seeing the physio, then I think that would be a really good start, because these lads in their head, they sort of realizing that actually I need to start taking notice of these sessions because the club are taking it seriously. And if I start lacking in it, then that might look bad on me. So yeah, I think making that complete culture shift, I think starting it from the top and letting it filter down and through your different positions, I think that'd be great. I mean, I think from a player's perspective, I think they would really pick up on that.
That's great. That's great. And it's, yeah, I think you're spot on there in terms of the culture. I think player care, the role, is big enough already without to try and do it yourself. I don't think you can do it yourself. Even those clubs and academies who have a team, you know, a player care team, which we're fortunate to be one of those. But, you know, even that, you know, far outweighs the numbers game. There's far more players, parents and staff that we have to kind of liaise with and to be able to, like you said, that holistic development. So, yeah, I mean, in terms of that culture, I think you're spot on with that response in that regard. Last question. It's not really a question, if I'm being honest, but last piece of advice, last quote, is it something, a quote or a reference that you come across in writing your dissertation paper, or something that, you know, the many people you've met across academy football, you know, football clubs in and around the region that really sticks out that you'd want to leave our listeners with?
Yes. Well, my tutor is going to absolutely love this one. So Michael Spencer Fern, he used to start our lectures off with a quote every day. He didn't actually use this one, but I'm sure he might steal it off me. So one I've sort of taken throughout my journey after football and through university is pressure is a privilege. So I think in order to be in a pressured environment, in this case, academy football, you know, playing or working, you've demonstrated that you're able to possess the skills and the knowledge to get into them situations to start with. So I think just back yourself more and believe in yourself. And when you do feel pressure, it's because you're doing something right, in my opinion.
Wow. I mean, what a message to end on. I think, yeah, I think I certainly forget that when you put it that way. Sometimes this time of the season, I do feel the pressure. But yeah, it is a privilege. It is a privilege to be in an academy football, in the role that I'm in and the previous roles that I've held. And I'm sure it was for you when you were a player, and I'm sure it will be for you when you're back in the academy system, you know, on the other end of the spectrum. So yeah, that's a great message to end on, a great message to leave our listeners with. And on behalf of our listeners, I want to thank you, Sam, for giving up your time. I know you've got other things on today, and yeah, I appreciate you taking 60 minutes out of your day. It's been great to speak to you. I know, you know, we'll speak again, and I really, really do look forward to kind of following your journey, seeing where you end up next, and I'm sure the great work that you're going to bring to the table in terms of player care. So yeah, thank you.
Really appreciate it, Lee. I've enjoyed it. Thank you very much.
This young man has a great future ahead of him, and as do the players Sam will work with in the near future. Mark my words. Plenty to digest in this one, but let's give it a go. Brutal is the word Sam described being released as an academy player. And this isn't the first time I've heard this in the last few weeks. Having witnessed players being released even in the most professional and supportive meetings, it's a description that fits well. Armoured with tools is how Sam described his preparation for his transition, and what a way to convey this approach. Academies, staff and external organisations, not just player care, provide opportunities to possess these, upskill in certain areas and be presented with a tool or strategy to help you along the way, in football and after football too. Be on the lookout for yours and how stacked is your toolbox. Finally, it has to be culture. Now, don't get me wrong, I haven't a magic wand or a go-to recipe for how you can create this. Even if I had one that works at one academy, simply wouldn't work at another. It just doesn't work that way. But even if you find yourself in a culture that discourages players from speaking out, you have to find a way. there are enough external organisations and support networks that operate outside of academies. And for those of you working in academies, have a think. Does your culture really convey a feeling of allowing players to be vulnerable, to be psychologically safe? That's 24 episodes down, two more to go for this season. Be sure to tune in next week to your penultimate episode of season 3 of Interviews from the Locker. Thanks for listening to this week's episode, and we hope you have taken many key messages away with you. But the next part is down to you now, by putting these into action. If you'd like today's episode, feel free to tell us on our various social media platforms, where you can find us at @thelocker_UK. For guest recommendations, future topics to be discussed, or you simply want to reach out, you can do so by emailing us on thedevelopmentlocker@gmail.co.uk. Remember to share this episode and our platform with your teammates, friends in football, or anyone you feel would benefit from it. So, what are you waiting for? But you're not done yet, as we look forward to seeing you next week when we bring you another Interview from the Locker.